Mayor hides the crime rates. Councilwoman hesitates. Public gets irate, but forgets the vote dates. Weatherman complaining. Predicted sun, it's raining. Everyone's protesting. Boyfriend keeps suggesting. You're not like all of the rest. Garbage ain't collected. Women ain't protected. Politicians using. People they're abusing. The mafia's getting bigger, like pollution in the river. And you tell me that this is where it's at. I woke out this morning with an ache in my head. I splashed on my clothes as I spilled out of bed. I opened the window to listen to the news, but all I heard was the establishment's blues. Gun sales are soaring.
The Establishment's Blues. That's out of Detroit, Sixto Rodriguez. It's from his 1970 album, Cold Fact. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And, well, it's a done deal now, the first of six scheduled presidential Q&A sessions. I refuse to call these debates. They are question and answer sessions. Held yesterday at the opulent Wynn Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. It was a CNN Facebook production. It had all of the bells and whistles of such a thing, a big production. So, of course, we are going to be dissecting that Q&A, and we will be debating the so-called debate on the program today. But first, let's hear from the candidates themselves as they introduced themselves, the way they would like to be known to the voters. This is how they introduced themselves last night. The candidates are Lincoln Chafee, former governor of Rhode Island and former U.S. senator from Rhode Island, Hillary Clinton, former secretary of state and former U.S. senator from New York. We had Martin O'Malley, former governor of the state of Maryland and former mayor of the city of Baltimore. Bernie Sanders, former, he still is, actually, senator from Vermont. He would like to be known as the former senator and president, current president of the United States. And Jim Webb, former U.S. senator from Virginia and former secretary of the Navy. So all five are introducing themselves to the 1,500 or so people packed in that auditorium, listening to this Q&A session, and this is what they said about themselves.
Not only will Americans be electing a new president next year, we also will be electing a world leader. Voters should assess the candidate's experience, character, and vision for the future as they make this important decision. I'm the only one running for president that has been a mayor, a United States senator, and a governor. As mayor, I brought labor peace to my city and kept taxes down. I was reelected three times. As a senator, I earned a reputation for courageous votes against the Bush-Cheney tax cuts that favored the wealthy, against the tragedy of the Iraq War, for environmental stewardship, for protection of our civil liberties. I served on the Foreign Relations Committee, and I chaired the Middle East Subcommittee for 4 years. As governor, I came in at the depths of the recession, and we turned my state around. Rhode Island had the biggest drop of the unemployment rate over my four budgets of all but one state. Happens to be Nevada, where we're having this debate. I'm very proud that over my almost 30 years of public service, I have had no scandals. I've always been honest, I have the courage to take the long-term view, and I've shown good judgment. I have high ethical standards. As we look to the future, I want to address the income inequality, close the gap between the haves and the have-nots. I want to address climate change, a real threat to our planet. And I believe in prosperity through peace. I want to end these wars. I look forward to the discussion ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Governor. Senator Webb, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Now, people are disgusted with the way that money has corrupted our political process, intimidating incumbents and empowering Wall Street every day with the turnstile government that we see, and also the power of the financial sector in both parties. They're looking for a leader who understands how the system works, who has not been co-opted by it, and also who has a proven record of accomplishing different things. I have a record of working across the political aisle. I've also spent more than half of my professional life away from politics in the independent world of being an author, a journalist, and a sole proprietor. In government service, I fought and bled for our country in Vietnam as a Marine. I spent years as Assistant Secretary of Defense, Secretary of the Navy in the Reagan administration. In the Senate, I spoke about economic fairness and social justice from day one. I also wrote and passed the best piece of veterans education legislation in history, the post-9/11 GI Bill. I brought criminal justice reform out of the political shadows and into the national discussion. I led what later became called the strategic pivot to Asia, 2 years before President Obama was elected. I know where my loyalties are. My mother grew up in the poverty of East Arkansas, chopping cotton, picking strawberries. 3 of her 7 siblings died in childhood. My wife, Hung, came to this country as a refugee from war-torn Vietnam, learned English, a language that was not spoken at home, and earned her way into Cornell Law School. I have 5 daughters. Amy works with disabled veterans. Sarah is an emergency room nurse. Julia is a massage therapist. Emily and Georgia are still in school. My son Jim fought as an infantry Marine on the bloody streets of Ramadi. You may be sure that in a Webb administration, the highest priority will be the working people who every day go out and make this country stronger at home and who give us the right reputation and security overseas under a common sense foreign policy. Thank you.
Governor O'Malley, you have 2 minutes.
My name is Martin O'Malley, former mayor of Baltimore, former governor of Maryland, a lifelong Democrat, and most importantly, a husband and a father. My wife, Katie, and I have 4 great kids, Grace and Tara and William and Jack. And like you, there is nothing we wouldn't do to give them healthier and better lives. There are some things that I have learned to do better in life than others. And after 15 years of executive experience, I have learned how to be an effective leader. Whether it was raising the minimum wage, making our public schools the best in America, passing marriage equality, the DREAM Act, and comprehensive gun safety legislation, I have learned how to get things done because I am very clear about my principles. Thanks to President Obama, our country has come a long way since the Wall Street crash of 2008. Our country's doing better. We are creating jobs again. But we elected a president, not a magician. And there is urgent work that needs to be done right now. For there is a deep injustice, an economic injustice that threatens to tear our country apart, and it will not solve itself. Injustice does not solve itself. What I'm talking about is this. Our middle class is shrinking. Our poor families are becoming poor, and 70% of us are earning the same or less than we were 12 years ago. We need new leadership, and we need action. The sort of action that will actually make wages go up again for all American families. Our economy isn't money, it's people. It's all of our people. And so we must invest in our country and the potential of our kids to make college a debt-free option for all families instead of saddling our kids with a lifetime of crushing debt. And we must square our shoulders to the great challenge of climate change and make this threat our opportunity. The future is what we make of it. We are all in this together. And the question in this election is whether you and I still have the ability to give our kids a better future. I believe we do. That is why I am running for president, and I need your help. Thank you.
Governor O'Malley, thank you very much. Senator Sanders.
Anderson, thank you very much. I think most Americans understand that our country today faces a series of unprecedented crises. The middle class of this country for the last 40 years has been disappearing. Millions of Americans are working longer hours for low wages, and yet almost all of the new income and wealth being created is going to the top 1%. As a result of this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, our campaign finance system is corrupt and is undermining American democracy. Millionaires and billionaires are pouring unbelievable sums of money into the political process in order to fund super PACs and to elect candidates who represent their interests, not the interests of working people. Today, the scientific community is virtually unanimous. Climate change is real, it is caused by human activity, and we have a moral responsibility to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy and leave this planet a habitable planet for our children and our grandchildren. Today in America, we have more people in jail than any other country on earth. African American youth unemployment is 51%. Hispanic youth unemployment is 36%. It seems to me that instead of building more jails and providing more incarceration, maybe, just maybe, we should be putting money into education and jobs for our kids. What this campaign is about is whether we can mobilize our people to take back our government from a handful of billionaires and create the vibrant democracy we know we can and should have. Thank you.
Secretary Clinton.
Well, thank you, and thanks to everyone for hosting this first of the Democratic debates. I'm Hillary Clinton. I have been proud and privileged to serve as First Lady, as a senator from New York, and as Secretary of State. I'm the granddaughter of a factory worker and the grandmother of a wonderful one-year-old child. And every day, I think about what we need to do to make sure that opportunity is available, not just for her, but for all of our children. I have spent a very long time, my entire adult life, looking for ways to even the odds to help people have a chance to get ahead, and in particular, to find the ways for each child to live up to his or her God-given potential. I've traveled across our country over the last months listening and learning, and I've put forward specific plans about how we're going to create more good-paying jobs by investing in infrastructure and clean energy, by making it possible once again to invest in science and research and taking the opportunity posed by climate change to grow our economy. At the center of my campaign is how we're going to raise wages. Yes, of course, raise the minimum wage, but we have to do so much more, including finding ways so that companies share profits with the workers who help to make them. And then we have to figure out how we're going to make the tax system a fairer one. Right now, the wealthy pay too little and the middle class pays too much. So I have specific recommendations about how we're going to close those loopholes, make it clear that the wealthy will have to pay their fair share, and have a series of tax cuts for middle class families. And I want to do more to help us balance family and work. I believe in equal pay for equal work for women, but I also believe it's about time we had paid family leave for American families and join the rest of the world. During the course of the evening tonight, I'll have a chance to lay out all of my plans and the work that I've done behind them. But for me, this is about bringing our country together again. And I will do everything I can to heal the divides economically, because there's too much inequality, the racial divides, the continuing discrimination against the LGBT community, so that we will work together. And yes, finally, fathers will be able to say to their daughters, you too can grow up to be president.
sounds nice and impressive. Everybody kind of put forward the best face and talked very loftily about very lofty goals. But this is, in fact, a Q&A. It is not a debate, and we should never, ever think that this was a debate or the other things that are coming will be debates. These are not debates. Some people need to know what a debate really is. This is a question and answer session. That's all it is. And, of course, in this format, being asked questions and really not engaging each other, what we have is a very carefully choreographed scenario where there's a lot of limitation as to where people are going. And, of course, it's the first, so that you have the sense of people not wanting to come out of the, you know, come out into the ring ready to do a knockout. They're basically testing the waters and so forth. But what we would like to do here is to deconstruct all that we have heard so far, a lot of it riddled with some serious contradictions. But let us take a look in the way that we analyze things on Lead Stories. We talk about the environment of an event or an issue. We look at the history of it. We look at the purpose of this Q&A session. We look at the interests of all parties involved, including the media, and we look at the facts that they have put on the table as the primary motivations for their positions that they will be presenting, I suppose, in the months to come. They will be amplifying and adding more to it and so forth. But from what we have heard so far, what are your thoughts? I'm imagining some of you were able to to survive the whole 2 hours of this Q&A. But what are your thoughts based on what you've just heard? What do you expect to come out of these debates, as they call them? What do you expect? What is the strategy being adopted here? What are you not hearing? Most importantly, what are you not hearing so far in all that has been said? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's get this thing deconstructed. Well, of course, you know, it's while you call in, I'll just express a few thoughts and guidelines here as to where we ought to take this conversation. The assumption is that we are politically aware. We kind of have an idea about what is important. Did you hear any of it? In the opening statement, of course, you know, in the course of the 2 hours, they got a chance to amplify on the themes that they set out in their introductions. But I'm curious about how you analyze these things. What do you bring in the way of expectations to an event such as this? How do you interpret the environment of it and therefore your relationship to this event? What are you supposed to be getting out of it? What are you hoping, if anything, to get out of this? And how close did this whole thing come to your expectation based on your understanding, your political understanding, and your political consciousness? Five people, so it's a manageable group. You can differentiate among them as to where they were going. But from what you heard just a while ago, and from what you might have heard if you tuned in last night to watch this Q&A session, what would you say was the most important thing that you took away from this experience? And how has this shaped your opinion, or how is it shaping your opinion about the political process? That's the task. Are you up to it? Let's see. 888-874-4888. Now, we have no end of analysis today, of course, people are saying, well, Hillary Clinton won, you know, hands down. But you look at this thing, and it's like a, it's for a conscious person, for a politically conscious person, these events are almost insults to your intelligence, because they are performances. They are performances. And in this environment, the whole idea here is marketing. And they did the candidates do what they were supposed to do? Did they get their points across? Did they, you know, did they look confident? And all these things are now factors. When you are expecting to hear substantive discussions, instead, we are conditioned to take a look at, is the person sweating too much? How did they dress? Did they look confident? Did they sound all right? And we are not paying attention to the substantive issues that are supposed to be shaping our views, shaping our reality. And yet that is exactly what is going on. Here you have CNN and Facebook, two multinational corporations, if you will. You have them shaping the collective political consciousness of the country. It is said to be a debate. So you think that's what it is. You absolutely think this, well, this is going to be a debate. But no, it's not. It's an event that has to do with the authority of an organization like CNN to shape political thought and action at a national and even international level. Why did it end up at the Wynn Casino and Resort? Because somebody knows somebody, and that's how it works. It's marketing. Put it there because the opulence of it will go really nicely with the image CNN wants to communicate. And the Democrats are okay with this, even as they stand there talking about how the working poor are suffering and the gap, the money gap between rich and poor. But for the media, this is an event that is key to marketing and to their revenues. That's the first thing. Let's talk about the media. We'll talk about the candidates in a minute. But CNN, this is a key to their revenue stream. So they demonstrated to the party and to the public, we are going to do this. We're going to show everybody how this is done. We have the resources. We have all the bells and whistles. We have our best correspondents and reporters on the case. We've got all the lighting right. We've got everything right. And we are in this wonderful, opulent place. And it is a show. In the way that we now must understand politics, we have to now accept that part of politics is the Hollywood production. That's what's important. Who puts on the best show? And why this is made a big part of the whole thing is because CNN and all the media organizations who are involved in these productions, they are depending on hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising money. We talked just 2 days ago, and I told you even before that, months ago, that the big nut here is close to $5 billion that these campaigns are expected to spend on advertising. And yesterday we talked about Hillary Clinton being ahead of everybody else, taking more than 5,000 ads already. That's money beginning to roll in. So the media organizations are basically making the case that They should spend money. You spend your money with us. And look what we are delivering. We are delivering what in the business is called high production value. Now, this is apart from the free advertising that Donald Trump himself said he's getting. He hasn't had to pay for any of this. They're giving it to him. They created this monster because the media failed, or the media insisted that it was more important, the production value and the marketing value and the potential revenue from a Donald Trump far outweighs their professional duty to decide what a story is. They acted as if they couldn't tell what a story is. So they created a Donald Trump, and they kept pumping a Donald Trump. Why? Because a Donald Trump, as outrageous as he has been, and tacky and racist in his views, it's good television. They're talking now marketing, and marketing is how many people are watching us. Very shortly, it may even be out today, we'll be hearing discussions about how many people watched these debates. And it's not because they were worth watching. It was because CNN got better ratings. And what that would do is shore up its hand when it sits across the table from these campaigns to say, this is the power that we have. When, in fact, the truth is that CNN is lagging, like MSNBC and NBC and all the others. They're all lagging behind Fox. Fox has been the king of the hill in terms of reach and in terms of audience, numbers of viewers. But this was CNN's turn, and it was making the point. That's the reason for all this opulence and all of this impressive stuff, is to make the case that they deserve a huge chunk of those $5 billion that will roll in through advertising campaigns. And so these things now are foisted on an unsuspecting public. You think you're tuning in to watch a debate. No, you're not. You're watching CNN demonstrating to possible advertisers the efficiency of the buy. This is how we differ from that other network. We have finesse. We are polished. We have all these bells and whistles at your disposal, and we will do our very best to give you the greatest advantage, tactical advantage, through the way we cover your campaigns. So, I see you're reluctant today to put on your thinking cap. There's no right or wrong. It is just what you are observing based on how we analyze things on this program. So, CNN was demonstrating, and it did a fine job at that, by the way. It demonstrated to advertisers and to these campaigns and to other advertisers. We'll have product advertisement going on because this has become more like the Olympic Games, which is another major revenue generator, or the football games. And they have now commodified it, fully commodified this process that we, the people, are still naive enough to think that it's about democracy. It isn't. This is a Hollywood production to shore up the revenue streams of these media organizations that are fighting tooth and nail for a huge chunk of a multi-billion dollar advertising budget. That's the first thing you need to understand about this. Why is this such a huge issue for these media? Why are they making this effort? Because they are suffering. The public gets its information differently, although for a certain demographic, the older demographic, their habits haven't changed as much. So they're still deriving a lot about their knowledge of politics and current events and news from traditional sources. And it's mostly television. Television still remains an effective means of communication for a large demographic that forms the bulk of the voting public. They still are within that realm of getting their information about politics and news, current events from mainstream television. For the younger groups, they get their information wherever they choose to get it. And they hunt around and find it. They have all these different sources of getting information and sharing information. Hence, Facebook. Facebook is there as a co-sponsor of this because Facebook intends, which has a major program. The major program is to penetrate markets outside of the United States. And what better way to do it than to partner with CNN in bringing us democracy, bringing us the democratic process. They're not interested in a democratic process. They already own the political process. They own the politicians. They own Congress. They have that. What they want is market share. And this event is perfect because on the one hand, it looks like they're performing a public service in providing information to the public about the democratic process. When on the other hand, what they're doing is actually building the case for market share and for shares of advertising revenue. That is the fact of it. Now, it used to be, as I've said before in this program, it used to be that when people were interested in knowing what the candidates were thinking, they used to be debates. I mean, you know, actual debates. But it was run by a regular group of people called the League of Women Voters. They used to organize these debates. They were not perfect by any means, but the intent is what I'm talking about here. There was no intent to commodify this process of sharing information with the public. It was, in fact, from the League of Women Voters, it was actually a part of what they saw as a contribution they could make to aid the democratic process by providing these debates that would inform the public and in turn inform the political choices of the public. They were nonpartisan and they decided that this was a good thing that they could do. And they did it in their own fashion. And it worked for quite a while until the media, in collaboration with political interests and lobbying groups and so forth, decided, hey, providing information, nah, we can make money. There's money to be made here. And so the media commandeered the whole process to the point where the League of Women Voters said, you know what, this is a fraud. This is no longer about informing the public. This is about making money, and we refuse to be part of this fraud. That was the word they used, fraud. The media didn't blink an eye. All of that high-minded stuff, all these high-minded ideals and whatnot went out the window. They saw a way that they can take this thing and make money. And the way they would make money is, of course, by commandeering something that people had become used to as a civic exercise, you know, something that informed the public, truly informed the public about where the candidate stood and to engage in this kind of civic exercise. It's about basically finding, using this debate process to give advertisers and the various campaigns a place to put the millions and millions of dollars that were available and that could be made available to influence the public. And so from that point on, you had an absolute manipulation of it, because now the media decided arbitrarily they will make the rules. They will take it over completely, completely monetize it, commodify it. And they have had no problems with it, no apologies for it, no explanations for how it is that they decided to take one thing that they should, by law, be happy to provide, because that's part of their licensing, is to inform the public. Here was a great thing, great way to fulfill the requirements of their licenses, but no, there's money in it. And they made the rules themselves. For example, in this so-called debate last night, and in the previous ones with the Republicans, what are the rules? You get to participate based on where you are in the polls. Who's ever heard of a thing like that? As if we don't know that the media themselves commission polls. So you have all the built-in incest here of how to manufacture the desired outcome, how to corrupt the system. And they're totally a part of it. You think it's accidental that Hillary Clinton wrapped up this introduction segment last? You think that's accidental, that she's in the middle? No. It is very clear that there is a great deal of incest going on here. And the media are just absolutely corrupt, totally bought and paid for, and are now part, I would go so far as to say, of suborning democracy. Part of the rigged system. And they are doing this with abandon. While they're making it look like it's legitimate, making it look like it is, in fact, a great thing that they're doing, it is all in the service of money. Lots and lots and lots of money. And it is interesting that the woman, the person who has spent the most money so far, is also doing well in the polls, is also doing well enough to qualify not only to be on the stage, but to be at center stage and to be last, in the last person to round up. We get it. We get it. So when we talk about these things, as we do on this program, the whole idea is to get you to understand what you're looking at. These are not debates. These are not debates. These are the platforms that justify the making of money. But the downside of all of that, there's nothing wrong with a media organization finding a way to make money. The downside of it is they are part of a corrupt system of shaping or misshaping public opinion. If CNN dares to suggest that they have been objective, or any of the other media organizations could dare to suggest that they have been objective in the coverage of this campaign so far, you know, they deserve to be flogged in public. Nothing so far has been objective except those things that I see in non-mainstream media. They're creating these monsters. They are deliberately foregoing the work that journalists ought to be doing, which is to look beyond what is being said, to check facts, to check history, to confront the truths. But that's not what they've done. How do we possibly explain that this is where we are, this advanced nation, this is where we are. And when you look at, when you hear what these candidates sound like, you go, oh my God, is this it? You mean all of that firepower on the stage? All of the firepower asking the questions? And still this amounts on an intellectual level. This is what I would expect from any reasonably well-educated high school student. In fact, it insults high school debates. But this is what we get. This is what we're getting. And these are supposed to be the best and the brightest, Republican and Democrat alike. And they have no real history of communicating truth to the American public. They don't have that as a history at all. Their thing is, let me tell you what I think you need to hear me say. And I'll say it. I don't necessarily mean it, but I'll say it because, hey, it's all a game. It's TV. It's marketing. It's what we have to do. And then the best that the questioners are doing is say, well, you said this, and then, but now you're saying that. This is high school stuff. This is high school stuff. So it's, to me, watching it from this perspective, and I'm just talking about the initial stuff. I haven't even gotten into the issues that were raised, or the so-called issues that were raised. I'm talking about simply the whole environment of this thing, the big picture. Because there is the same charge that the League of Women Voters made all those years ago remains valid. It is a fraud. It is a fraud. Now, if we were to have debates, what we would have is we have a free forum. We wouldn't have people qualifying on the basis of how they're running in the polls. We will have people qualifying on the basis of what they have to offer, what they want to offer. And then it would be up to the media organizations covering these things as debates to decide how to accommodate the traffic. But when you make the decision, and the media now has placed itself, and I hope we don't let them off the hook on this one, they have arbitrarily decided and have now backed it up with their actions of being highly discriminatory. Highly discriminatory and arbitrary. They're making the rules. So now they are part of the corrupt system. Ron from LA, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. I thought the debates were really a big farce in this sense, particularly the analysis after it. One, oh, Hillary, she won the debate. Come on. Were we listening to the same debate? Number two, I think Chafee made some good points, particularly on Imperial War and how important it was on that Iraqi war vote. And then the other one that they ignore is Jim Webb. I think he was kind of like the adult in the room, taking head on issues of the prison industrial complex, and he was doing that almost 10 years ago, but they just kind of ignore him. And then in summary, Chafee doesn't exist, Webb doesn't exist. It's Hillary's done such a huge job, and because, like, case in point, when he was drilling her on Libya, Oh, not one single troop was involved in Libya. What about the ambassador and da-da-da? Oh, I'll get to that later. And then she never gets to that later. And they don't call her on it. It's just like, it's sort of like back in the 60s when America was saying in Russia, there's a controlled press, it's all propaganda. Well, listening to the media, the debate last night, that's what they was talking about in the 60s about the Soviet Union.
But, I mean, it looks so polished. It looks so credible. It looks so believable. It looks so honest and open and, to use the word of the day, transparent. How is it that you ended up with that opinion?
Well, because after going through all we've, here in America, we've gone through with politicians lying to our faces, i.e. Obama, hope and change, et cetera, or even the Clintons for that matter. We've been lied to so often that everybody knows the trick now. Because, you know, they played that hand so often, you know it's coming. So all the so-called polishness and so forth, and from a technical standpoint, CNN was very professional and articulate, et cetera. But still, when you look into the substance of it, it's just a charade. And like I said, I think that could Jim Webb be president of the United States? Of course. Could Chafee be president? Of course. But they're going to try to flip it like, oh, these guys are just totally, totally unqualified and going to tell you that with a straight face. And then expect you so stupid, you just going to believe it. But again, they've come with that play so many times. I think the American public is just getting hip to it, and it's just not going to fly.
But I want to go back to what you said earlier, and that is the aftermath is where the media now zooms in after the event. And in case you didn't get the point of view that they wanted you to get, all of this analysis post facto is also aimed at conditioning you to think. Of course, Hillary won. Am I just a little bit ridiculous in saying this, or is this something that you
No, that's very legitimate. That's very legitimate. And I think I've noticed recently there's no commentary sections on a lot of the media's websites. Case in point, the Daily Beast, which is mainstream propaganda tool, et cetera, et cetera. But they still have some good articles, and after each article, they used to, you know, people could, you know, give their comments. And over the last 2 weeks, they say they cut that out. You got to go to Facebook for that. And I'm thinking, because one of the reasons I read their articles, because I like to see contrasting views that would come up on a lot of pertinent issues. And so they've eliminated that. And I think, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I think that's also part of conditioning the population. You know, we got a major website, the Daily Beast, that a lot of people come and congregate. Let's cut out that. No, we don't want to hear from the people. So no more comment section. And I heard on another network that might be part of the plan. Furthering conditioning, brainwashing the public.
So what is this likely to do to your thinking about this 2016 presidential race?
Well, it's sort of, one could just conclude, it is what it is. You're living in a totalitarian dictatorship. No different than what we were told back in the 1965, 66, 67 about the Soviet Union. It is no different. So we just recognize that reality, okay, and try to make the best of it. But that's one reality. We just got to confront it. Hey, Soviet Union, 1966, here we are.
Thanks, Ron, for your comments today and for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Okay, and
thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of the program. And at some point, of course, we have Free Your Mind Friday, and we can follow that up at your decision, because it is for the listeners on Free Your Mind Friday to decide where the conversation goes. Until then, of course, you can certainly follow up. Send me a note at leadstories@gmail.com. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club, and certainly you can write me at leadstories@gmail.com. Thanks so much for being with me. Always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.
It's gonna fall soon to an angry young tune, and that's a concrete cold fact. The Pope digs population, freedom from taxation. Teeny bops are uptight, drinking at a stoplight. Miniskirt is flirting, I can't stop, so I'm hurting. Spencer sells her hopeless chest. Adultery plays the kitchen. Bigot cops.